Today on the 10-12 podcast, we welcome Parker Fleming to the show to discuss which 3-0 teams in the Big 12 are legit and which ones are fake, which 2-1 team we're least concerned about, the massive issues going on at Oklahoma State and Iowa State, our sicko game of the week, and a historic number in the Big 12 that could be broken this season.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome to the 10-12, the podcast that covers all 14 teams in the Big 12 Conference, plus Colorado, Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah. We are the flagship show of the 10-12 Network. Find every podcast in the network at 1012network.com. That's T-E-N, the number 12, the word network. Plus, we are partners with Sport Social, the biggest sports podcast network in Europe. I'm your host, Philip Slavin. Thank you for joining us. To recap week three in the Big 12, what a week it was, and I don't mean that as a compliment. Whew! Folks, we're going to have to do some reflection, self-analysis about the Big 12 this year. May not be good. It may not be good. We'll deal with that and hope to ignore it, and then it's just whatever. I don't know. What we are going to do today, first I'm going to introduce our guests. Oh, it's been a long weekend. They join me every Monday to recap the weekend that was and look ahead to the week that will be. First off, the vibe queen of the 10-12 network herself, JSJ, Jamie Steyer Johnson.
Oh man, let me tell you, what a great weekend. You know, you get a huge rivalry win, 3-set sweep over Drake. I mean, I just can't think of a better athletic weekend for Iowa State. Volleyball, you go, Christy Johnson Lynch.
The host of the Rock Chalk podcast, the Kansas show that represents the 10-12 network, Andy Mitz.
Look, I say we just, you know, completely forget that week three ever happened for anybody in the Big 12, except for BYU, because they had a fantastic win against Arkansas. But everyone else, you know, no one really cares about week three. It doesn't matter.
The BYU game was fun. I enjoyed it immensely. A game of runs is like watching a basketball game on grass. I guess it's not about speed, but you know what I mean. And here to provide some analytical analysis as we do a little something different to recap week three and kind of the season so far. I would name the show that he's on, but he's on so many. If you don't know him by now, I don't know. Get on Twitter. He is Stats of War himself, Iowa State's greatest enemy, Parker Fleming.
Look, I was going to say, shout out to Christy Johnson Lynch, man. I pulled up her bio and Jamie said something there. And there it says, there's many ways to describe Johnson Lynch's tenure at Iowa State. First, there is the winning. That's a great flex. I love that. I'm hyping a girl up over there. Shout out to Christy Johnson Lynch.
She's incredible.
That is a hell of a line. That is fantastic. I love that. Okay. What we're going to do today, one of the reasons we want to get Parker on here, is we're going to talk, to start things off, about the Big 12 teams that are currently 3-0, who have survived the first 3 weeks of the season unscathed. Now, for all the 3-0 teams, that is 3-0 in non-conference. There are two teams who have played a conference game. They are not 3-0. We might touch on them later. We'll kind of see how this show goes. The teams who are currently 3-0 and undefeated, Texas, Oklahoma, UCF, BYU, and Kansas. So here's the name of the game, folks. Real or fake? 3-0. Is this a real team that we should be paying attention to that is a Big 12 contender and is a real shot to have an incredible season? Or is this a 3-0 that doesn't mean a whole lot by the end of the season, could still sit here at 6-6, 7-5, and yay, you're going bowling, but that's a nice year. Andy, since you were late, and the reason that we're starting this recording at 7 till 9 o'clock, and God's time.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Of course you don't, no.
Okay.
Texas.
What?
We're going to start with Texas.
Oh, okay. Okay, Texas. Yes.
And we're going to go through everybody's opinion. Texas. 3-0.
Yes, they're real.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, you can have concerns about the first half against Wyoming, but as we saw with everybody in the Big 12, like, everybody had weird results for the most part, except for Oklahoma, who, you know, needs to actually play somebody. But, like, everybody's had weird results so far in the Big 12, so I can write off a one half against a Wyoming team that has shown to be pretty feisty. You know, they came out in the second half and showed why they were, you know, ranked in the top five, and I think Texas is probably still the team to beat in the conference right now.
Jamie?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched a second of Texas, if we're being honest. So, sure. I would have watched yesterday, but Longhorn Network, so it's their fault. I'm sure they're good. Kansas will beat them, and that'll be that.
That's the hating ass energy we need in the Big 12 going forward. Is I don't care. Yeah, whatever. It's Texas. That's fine. I have Texas as a double digit favorite on a neutral over everybody except Oklahoma and Kansas State. And Oklahoma, I'd have them by about 6 points. Kansas State have them by about 9 points. So very clear favorite. I think that this summer I talked a bunch about how we needed to be unafraid of the meme and say, look, this is it. They're at the peak of their development cycle. They've got multiplicity on offense that no one has, and their defensive consistency is just about as high as anyone's there. So this is absolutely Texas's conference to lose, as boring and chalky as it is. I think the one thing you can point to with Texas that if we're talking about not just Big 12 contention, but national contention, is like Quinn Ewers, when he looks off, he looks off. Like, not a great game against Rice. They were very vanilla. Wyoming was not locked in. And those wouldn't really worry me because he had a great game against Alabama. But you go last season, and the whole issue with Quinn Ewers is not that he was bad. It's that he was just off. The timing wasn't there. The routes weren't there. It looked weird. And when you see some of that looking weird again, you think, okay, if stuff hits the fan, they don't have an excellent game plan against a team that had, you know, only 40% returning production like Alabama did coming into the season. Is Ewers going to be able to rebound from kind of a weird start to a game, or a little bit of miscommunication with the receivers? That's something I'm still a little interested in terms of national contention. But in terms of the Big 12, I think that they can score on anyone, and I think they are the team to beat.
You mentioned defensive efficiency. According to ESPN, they have the number one ranked defensive efficiency in the country so far through three games. So the defense is good. It's real good. And look, I don't think they're going to go undefeated. They're going to get tripped up, because I think the performances against Wyoming and Rice show that there's still a little bit of Texas there, where they don't treat every game like they treated Alabama, or like they'll treat Oklahoma, or they'll treat maybe one or two other games in the Big 12. Somebody will get them. But like, the idea that this Texas team isn't going to be in Arlington and isn't going to be the favorite for the Big 12 title is insane. They're for real. Speaking of Oklahoma, the only team in the Big 12 who is 3-0 against the spread so far this season and have covered double-digit spreads every single week. Andy, you made a comment about the opponent so far, but you do have to give credit to a team who has gone out and made those inferior opponents look like absolutely inferior opponents by the final score. Andy, Oklahoma for real or fake?
This is the one where I really don't know at this point. Like, I want to say that they're real based off of how big they've won, but they really, like, they literally have not played anybody that's worth that, like, really tells us anything. Yes, they did what you're supposed to do and absolutely blowing people out. But, you know, they ran into tons of problems last year with their defense when they went up against good offenses, and their offense having, you know, dealing with a defense that could actually stop them every once in a while. The fact that they were only up 14-11 going in, you know, in the fourth quarter against SMU, that has me extremely worried about, like, what happens if they're off? Like, what happens if things aren't going really well for them? are they going to be able to actually do what they need to do to put games away against tough Big 12 conference opponents? I think they can, but I don't know yet because I've seen way too many warning signs and I haven't seen them be able to do it against an opponent that I actually respect as an opponent for them.
That would be my logic as well. If not for the fact that I thought the same thing about LSU women's basketball last year, where they tried to put together the worst non-conference schedule I have ever seen in my entire life. Their goal was basically to hang 100 in every game. They didn't state it, but I genuinely think it was. And I was like, man, ain't no way they're getting through the SEC with that. And then they won the national championship. So, sure, Oklahoma's for real. That's fine.
Yeah, I think we have this tendency, and I do this a bunch, to say, like, all right, they looked good against bad teams, so, like, that doesn't mean they're good. But in some ways, I mean, you want to look good against bad teams, right? Like, that's absolutely the case. I wouldn't want anything else at Oklahoma. Maybe a few more points versus SMU, but even then, I think it's pretty clear they were doing some offensive stuff that let's just skip over this entirely. Maybe there wasn't exactly full alignment headed into the SMU game in terms of what they wanted to do with their lives and with their offense. So looks like they got the ship right with Tulsa. I think that last year, people forget Dylan Gabriel was the highest graded PFF quarterback in the Big 12 last year when he was healthy. And most of their depth issues, the depths of their kind of despair last season came because they were running Davis Bethel and the Wildcat because they just couldn't do anything when Gabriel got hurt. It was a question going into season last year. So the proof of concept here of Gabriel's healthy, they can play. They look good. Jackson Arnold coming in garbage time, looking really good as well, gives them some solid depth there as well. They still have a very, very big talent advantage. I think the real test for me, I mean, they've got nothing until Texas, right? Five games. Cincinnati, Iowa State should win both of those by double digits, off and away. Should be a very, very easy kind of lead up there. But it really all does come down to that. It is kind of interesting that in the last year of the league, these two teams, again, play each other when we have an unbalanced schedule. That's the most likely rematch in Arlington as well, because Oklahoma State's schedule is just not very tough outside of that Texas game. So given their weak schedule the rest of the season, I mean, I think that they're just experimenting on offense, saying, what can we all put out there? Let's save some of the tank and make sure that we can get these guys, get some good reps, kind of find our identity, but not give Texas everything that we're going to do. So I think they're for real. I think we're talking about not necessarily a classic Lincoln Riley, Oklahoma is good and everyone else is terrible season, but are we talking about, are you at the top of the Big 12? Are you that upper middle class? Absolutely. I think Oklahoma is real.
Yeah. We said this in the off season, like the concern for Oklahoma is like, this could be an Oklahoma team who is not as good as the record indicates, but because of the way their schedule stacks and because they do think they are better than they were last year, like the nightmare scenario is in play here, people. We talked about this. The OU and Texas being in Arlington on their way out of the Big 12, head to the SEC, haha, we win, you guys suck. Like, is in real. The scenario is real. Because at this point, at Cincinnati, Iowa State, Texas, UCF's at home. They go to Kansas and Oklahoma State. West Virginia's at home, at BYU, TCU. Looking at the schedule the rest of the way, like Texas and a road game at BYU in November might be the two most difficult games left on their schedule. And I don't think it's that close from that. So we shall see. Okay. Speaking of UCF, UCF is 3-0 so far. Andy, is UCF for real or fake?
I mean, again, if we're depending on how we define for real, you know, the way that you talked about it is, you know, in the mix for the Big 12 championship.
When you're 3-0, expectations of a team that starts the season 3-0 is you're going to have a good year, right? Your fan base is like, yeah, we're awesome. Right. We're going to win a bunch of games. Maybe we're going to make it to the conference championship. We're going to contend. Like, you view yourself as, we got through this slate of games. We haven't lost one. We're really good. You should be ranking us in the AP top 25, right? So with that mindset, is this a good team? Is 3-0 mean something or does it mean nothing at all?
I don't know that we have enough from UCF yet. Like, I think that they are a good team. I think that they are a team that has the potential. What I worry about is the fact that they, you know, they had to have that close win against Boise. And yes, it was out in Boise, but Boise is not a, you know, the the Boise team that we're used to seeing. Yeah, they're going to be a decent team in the Mountain West this year. But they're not like going to run away with the Mountain West or anything like that, or, you know, have an opportunity, I think, to upset a whole bunch of teams in the bowl season if they actually get there. And so, I mean, or I should say when they actually get there, because I mean, like, I think Boise is going to a bowl, but I don't put them at like a 10 win team this year. And so you get some credit for winning that one, but they looked awful for big stretches of that game against Boise. You know, they completely beat the crap out of the two teams that they really should have beaten the crap out of. Like, give them credit for that. Again, it's kind of like with the Oklahoma thing, but in the biggest test that they had, I saw enough to make me worry about, is it all going to hold together? I think they have the potential to be able to run off some good wins here, but I worry when it gets difficult, are they going to have what they need to pull it, or to keep it all together and to continue to make that push? I could see them having, you know, a 4-3 record kind of going in the last five games and then having to figure out if they can get enough to really be where they need to be.
Jamie.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of stand by what I said, without really thinking about it very much before the start of the season, where I thought UCF could maybe be a little bit ahead of schedule as far as being able to compete in the Big 12. I think that going out and really taking care of business against inferior opponents, like you were saying, Andy, and then being able to go and win on the road in Boise, like, that's a tough environment. That's very much a difficult game for many reasons. Obviously, if you're wanting to go out and compete for a championship, you'd probably want to take care of business a little bit more there. But in the end, you get a win, and winning in close games is very difficult, I've been told. So I think that they are going to be top half. I think that they will be competing in a bowl game. I don't know that I would be picking them to make the championship for the conference at this point. But I certainly can see a scenario in which they could be in the conversation when we revisit this in a couple weeks still.
Parker?
Fake if John Reese Plumlee is hurt. I think we saw him play hurt and that he was pretty bad. I mean, they probably should have lost that Boise game with the turnover margin and looking at yards per play. And like Andy mentioned, Boise's just not Boise right now. You know, looking at it, it's funny to see a guy like Mikey Keene go to Fresno and absolutely go off, because he can stand in the pocket and make reads and throw, but he can't run. He can't run the Gus Malzahn on offense. That's what you got to do. That's what you got to run. So Timmy McClain, only 7 attempts against Villanova. It's Villanova. We're not going to take too much of that. Two of those went 10 plus yards, but, I don't know that McClain is a game-changing rusher in the same way that Plumlee is, and he's certainly a worse passer, which very low bar to clear, and I still think that he's clearing it. And I think that what that ends up being is that when we get into conference play, what I'm watching for against Kansas State here is dimensionality. The run game is legitimately good for UCF. RJ Harvey is good. They've got some continuity in the offensive line there. The gravity of having a rushing quarterback really, really helps. But if I can shut down any semblance of a pass, if I can lock up the two dudes, Hudson and Baker, and even Townsend's been a little spicy there as a third option, 10 targets. But Hudson and Baker, if I look, my ones can go against the ones in the pass game, and I'm just asking a worse guy to beat me. If I can take away the run and say, Timmy McClain, you make a precision pass, and that's how I'm going to lose the game, I think UCF's ceiling is very, very firmly that 5-6-7 best case scenario right now. So depending on how long they go without John Reese Plumlee, I'm inclined to believe they're going to be more towards that middle of the pack, 7-8-9. But if he comes back, if they can be a little bit feisty, they have a stronger sense of identity than a lot of other teams, then we're flirting with that, you know, 5-6-7 kind of finish for them. So not real pending the status of John Reese Plumlee. And the longer that he's out, the less real they are.
And that makes a lot of sense.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Andy, the team nearest and dearest to your heart, Kansas Jayhawks, 3-0. I would definitely call that a disappointing win, though for Kansas, you shouldn't be taking any win lightly when it comes to football, even a win on the road at Nevada that was closer than it probably should have been. Andy, is Kansas for real or fake?
I would trend to calling them for real. And I think it's very fair to question after that game against Nevada. What I would mention, though, is the fact that you look at, you know, they were without Austin Booker, one of the better pass rushing specialists that they had, you know, in the game against Illinois, and they were without Kobe Bryant for the first half. You know, they had some weird, I would say some really weird fumbled luck in that they forced 5 fumbles against Nevada and did not recover a single one of them. That's not something that happens very often. If you're forcing that many fumbles, typically you're getting some of those, at least, you know, 2 of them. And that completely, I think, changes the complexion of that game. You know, from reports that I was seeing, it didn't make it out to the betting public at all, but Devin Neal was playing that game hurt and still had a really good game. Like, there was a lot of stuff going on for Kansas behind the scenes, going out to the Pacific time zone for the first time since 2002. Like, it's been a really long, a difficult week for the Jayhawks because of everything that happened after coming off of the emotion of the huge win against Illinois for them, a game that they fairly dominated until we had some reffing shenanigans that got some players ejected and then Illinois started making a comeback. So I think there's enough there that you can explain away kind of the weird results that make you question them. But I think that's also like, there's still enough there to make you wonder. The one thing that I don't worry about is this offense. They're averaging over 500 yards a game. They're just absolutely all over the place and, you know, doing a fantastic job offensively. Jalen Daniels has looked really good in the last 2 weeks. He didn't have any touchdown passes against Nevada, but that was because 3 times they were tackled at the 1 yard line in, you know, plays that they should have gotten into the end zone. And instead Devin Neal or Daniel Hyshaw or somebody else mopped it up to get a 1 yard touchdown run. So I think the offense is clicking the way it's supposed to. The defense is playing, I think, a lot better than a lot of people expected coming into the year. The question, of course, is, can they keep it up? There's really, I think, an open question about how good Illinois was. So how much should you actually take from that? But from what I saw Illinois play, you know, against Penn State, they held up for, you know, about 3 quarters against Penn State as well. And then everything kind of went to crap for them. So I think there's enough there to say that that Kansas is for real. And the schedule, with the exception of the Texas game next week, the schedule worked out fairly well for them in that they play BYU at home. They play UCF at home. They play Oklahoma at home. You know, they go on the road to Oklahoma State. They go on the road to Iowa State. You know, they have Texas Tech at home. Like, all of the big contenders, they have them at home this year. All the games they have on the road, for the most part, are against teams that you would expect them to be able to beat based off of the early results. So I think Kansas has a good pathway set up. The real question is just, you know, are those issues that we saw, is it related to weirdness going on with players being unavailable because of targeting penalties? Or, you know, is there actually a big concern there?
Jamie?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of what you were alluding to, Andy, that I don't know that it's enough to, again, I haven't watched their full games either. I'm not breaking down the film, but I think that Nevada's bad, and Illinois is also going to be, at the best, not good. So it's very hard to see those games both be close and feel confident in saying they're for real. I think you can say they're not fake. You can fall somewhere in the middle, but to go into those games and to have it end up being very close, there's certainly some things you want to shore up. And if it is, in fact, just having everyone available and having people healthy and not having, you know, kind of stupid penalties rule people out, then sure, that is what it is. But whatever it is, I definitely would not feel confident in making a ruling at this time.
Parker?
I think they're fake. And I think that the biggest issue is not the offense is legitimately fun. It really is. And like seeing Quentin Skinner kind of distinguish himself as their main target and then Lawrence Arnold be there as a second option has been really, really fun. I think that what we have in common with Kansas's opponents to start the season is unfamiliarity. And I think that is a very, very big advantage that Kansas has over an opponent is we can throw a lot at you. I mean, they ran 19 or 20 different formations, like against Illinois, just absolute nonsense. It was beautiful. And it was had to be so infuriating for Bielema and their defense over there. But I will say also, Illinois lost their defensive coordinator, lost a couple NFL guys, had some really big holes there, and is starting an absolute robot at quarterback in Luke Altmaier, who literally can do if then, and then otherwise he breaks down. Like if the if then doesn't work, he breaks down. So good win. I'm not going to penalize Kansas for winning that game, but the Nevada game was certainly underwhelming. What I'm concerned about is that I think the defensive depth is really thin, even if it's better than it has been in the past. I think the defensive ceiling is very, very low. And what I'm worried about is two things with Kansas. One, film. I've seen Jalen Daniels. I'm not going to get beat by him again. That's the latitude of a lot of people. And they play some new opponents. They do. They play UCF. They play BYU. So they have some advantage there. But, hey, he's a known commodity now. I'm not going to get beat by him. Two, in the past, it's been true that Big 12 teams have kind of treated the Kansas game like a de facto bye. Haven't necessarily done their homework. Have said, we're going to be able to skate by. And I think that that's not the case anymore. So kind of the familiarity aspect plus the taking it a little more seriously aspect coupled with low ceiling on defense. I'm a little bit skeptical about Kansas's ceiling. They did. I mean, they had some injury issues last year and I'm going to be the first one to say Jason Bean is a fine quarterback. Like the drop off from Jalen Daniels to Jason Bean is big, but Jason Bean is a better than replacement player at quarterback there for sure for them. So, but down the stretch last year, defense did have some issues. They did lose a lot of games there. And I'm just worried about their ability to replicate that performance, given the factor of it's on tape. And we're going to prep a little bit more for you. And the defensive ceiling's a little bit low. So I'm out on Kansas for now. Hopefully they change their mind because their offense is very fun, but I'm out for now.
That's all right, Parker. I'm used to people, you know, not believing me.
Andy, I think the last time we talked about Kansas on a podcast, I told you that Kansas going to a bowl last year was so far outside of my like 95% projection that it was laughable. So
yep,
I've exactly. been wrong before. I'll be wrong again.
I'm glad I would have been more, I think I would have been more worried about Kansas if you had said that they were for real. So, I mean, I'm, you know, I fully expect
it's them. Like, we're still living in the same universe. We haven't diverted to an alternate timeline,
right?
The darkest timeline. Kansas is national champion in football. All right. Last one.
You said it, not me.
it's BYU Cougars. Who just nabbed arguably the second best win the Big 12 has in non-conference so far with a road win at Arkansas. Yes, I'm not like super high on Arkansas. And there was it's a weird game, but they still got the win on the road in Fayetteville. Don't schedule home and homes with BYU. Kalani Sitake will get you the second time around. Andy, is BYU for real or fake?
I struggle with this one because I'm tending still towards saying that I need to see more from BYU. I understand, you know, that Keaton Slovis has played really well in the last couple games. There was some huge concerns against Sam Houston. The fact that it took them so long to kind of get things together against a very bad Sam Houston team. They only won that game 14-0. The defense, I wonder about that defense. We have seen plenty of teams that have good offenses, but not great offenses, which is how I would classify BYU's offense, with a defense that just can't do enough. I mean, I'm a Kansas fan. I've seen tons of those. So I'm worried about their ability long-term to keep it up. You know, I was a little surprised at first when I took a look at the fact that, you know, Kansas is favored or opened up favored by 7 points against BYU. And I was like, what's going on there? And it's because BYU has struggled. Like, yes, they have 3 wins. The offense hasn't really looked good in most of them. They haven't looked good consistently. They've been a very up and down team. They got down 14-0 against Arkansas, came storming back all of a sudden, you know, to lead 21-14, then immediately went down 31-21. Like that was a very back and forth game with a lot of strange momentum going back and forth, and which is it good for them to be able to get that road win. I just don't know how many times they're going to be able to do that with a quarterback and an offense that's as inconsistent as they've been this year.
Jamie?
Yeah, I mean, same kind of deal. Like, I think that they're solid. I am not ready to say that they're totally fake and about to tank, but I'm also not declaring them going to the championship game. I think that they are much more likely to finish somewhere in the middle, and I don't have anything else good to add other than that.
Parker?
I don't think we're talking enough about BYU losing and having to replace one of the greatest wide receivers in NFL history, Puka Nacua, who has just out of nowhere, in a Brock Purdy-like turn of fashion, has just become one of the greatest stars in the NFL overnight.
It's not nowhere. Speaking of someone who got him bought as much Puka Nacua stock in all of his fantasy football leagues, it is not out of nowhere.
Dude, shout out to Puka Nacua. But I had BYU as the lowest rated team coming into in the Big 12 coming into the season. I think the turnover on offense was a lot. Not a believer in Slovis. Did not really love what I saw out of Slovis at Pitt. Anywhere. I don't know anywhere at all. And I think that the defense, particularly the back seven, is rough. Linebackers are maybe a little better than I gave them credit for, but I think the secondary is potentially really rough. So I've adjusted them upward for the Arkansas win, but mostly they've just been passed by Cincinnati, Iowa State, Houston, who are just worse and just objectively worse and have moved down. So I'm going to say, excuse me, I'm going to say that I'm still out on BYU. I'm slow to adjust. Arkansas, really flighty, really weird, in kind of a weird development cycle, even though they have a senior quarterback there. And that game was extremely odd. I have BYU and Kansas power rated the same. I have the same. And I think that, so like the line this week is 7 points. I have it closer to 2.5, which would be just home field advantage here.
It's also up to 9.5 after like
good
6 hours.
Lord.
I know. It's
ridiculous. I wonder if I've been doing other stuff. I'm going to do my homework this evening and tomorrow. I wonder if there's not an injury I'm missing. But all that to say, I like BYU here. I think the home field advantage certainly gives them an edge with the schedule. But I don't know, like this is clearly a turnover year. And I think they have one good offensive lineman. I think we're in a situation where their depth is not going to hold up very well. I mean, they looked awful against Sam Houston. And Sam Houston is just not a Power Five team at all. And so I think out of BYU, what I need to see is good play from Keaton Slovis. I think second highest QBR this week. That's great. Consistency. That's what I need out of him. But I don't know, sometimes and not sometimes, all the time when you're doing like making a model empirically, you talk about this like bias variance trade-off. So like you can be precise, but then you're going to get a lot more variance. If you minimize the variance, you might be off. Keaton Slovis kind of has this like efficiency and explosiveness trade-off, I think, in the BYU offense. So like if he's going to be efficient, I don't know they're going to be very explosive. If he's going to be explosive at all, he's going to be super erratic. So I don't know what the vision for the BYU offense is kind of managing that. And then again, the back seven, I'm not super high on. So I'm out on BYU as well. I'm calling them the 3-0 fake, pretty easy competition and a pretty weird spot for Arkansas there.
Yeah, I think the thing that jumps out to me with BYU is I have them a lot like Cincinnati, where things could have gone really good if all of the changes worked for them, and they could fall apart at any time as well, just because there's no consistency, I think, at all in the way that Cincinnati and the way that BYU have been successful this season. We saw Cincinnati lose to Miami of Ohio. Like, that was a game that the way that they lost that one, it's the same sort of things that I'm concerned about with BYU. So if I'm picking one of the 3-0 teams to completely fall off from this point forward, I think BYU's the most likely one, just given what they had coming into the year.
I think that's a fair way to frame it. Also, I'm contractually obligated to say that I think Cincinnati stinks and made a terrible hire and is going to be in such a bad place as a program for the next couple of years.
We'll get to them in a second. One thing that is for real, Charlie Hustle, this podcast, and the 1012 Network is brought to you by our friends at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. Charlie Hustle is a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. Charlie Hustle wants you to be the best-dressed fan this season and the most comfortable, so be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit all season long. They have every Big 12 team except for Cincinnati, the aforementioned school. They're working on it. Look, this stuff takes time. Okay, it's typically not the apparel company's fault. It's the school wants to be stubborn. Whatever. But the collections that they have for the rest of Big 12 are incredible, especially if you're a Kansas and Kansas State fan. Folks, it's based out of Kansas City. Like, which schools were some of the first ones you think they got? Yeah. And they have great stuff. They have an Oklahoma State wrestling shirt. Other cool vintage apparel companies don't have Oklahoma State wrestling shirts. Charlie Hustle does. And Charlie Hustle wants to be in the Big 12. That sold them to us. Plus, the stuff is incredible. So, go to charliehustle.com. Use the promo code 10-12-15, T-E-N-1-2-1-5, for 15% off all non-sale items. I did not say first purchase. I said all non-sale items. So if you want to buy something for yourself now, and maybe you want to do some Christmas shopping later, promo code 10-12-15, T-E-N-1-2-1-5, for 15% off all non-sale items. With over 30 schools to choose from, including 13 of the 14 current Big 12 schools, they've got you covered with all your collegiate apparel needs. Shop today at charliehustle.com. Use that promo code 10-12-15 for 15% off. Charlie Hustle, vintage, made fresh.
I have to say, the way you said Charlie Hustle does made me think of the Family Guy Pepperidge Farm remembers.
Pepperidge Farm remembers, yes, they do. Parker, before we get
don't make me do math. Who are they missing?
Cincinnati.
The only one that they're missing.
Oh, you said that. Okay, yeah. That's fine.
I mentioned. Yeah.
It's all right.
There also happen to be five current teams in the Big 12 who are 2-1 through 3 weeks of the season. I want to ask each of you, who is the one that you are, let's say, least concerned about moving forward? Where the loss is a loss, it doesn't necessarily mean that the season is over. They've still got a ton to play for, and that may be one of the only losses they suffer this season, perhaps. Those schools are TCU, Kansas State, Cincinnati, Oklahoma State, and West Virginia. TCU's loss, of course, to Colorado in week one. Kansas State this past weekend to Missouri. Cincinnati this past weekend to Miami of Ohio in the battle for the bell. Oklahoma State at home to South Alabama this week. And West Virginia in week one at Penn State.
Philip, I noticed that you couldn't say that one with a straight face. No, okay.
Maybe. We'll see.
I'll jump in here because there's two different ways to look at this, right? There is which one is their loss most concern or least concerning? And for me, that would be West Virginia, because we fully expected them to lose to Penn State. And honestly, I thought they played against Penn State a whole lot better than I expected them to. However, I don't think that their ceiling coming into the year was nearly as high as with Kansas State. I'm concerned about the way that Kansas State lost to Missouri, but the fact that they lost to Missouri isn't necessarily, you know, as worrying as most of the other ones. So I would say in terms of team that I'm the highest on moving forward, that's definitely Kansas State. Team that I am least concerned by the way that they lost or the team that they lost to would be West Virginia.
Okay, fair take. Jamie?
I got lost for a second. I'm just going to be honest.
Look, you
lost
said
my tab. I was trying to think.
Go ahead.
I've been really good so far.
You've been killing it, Jamie. Just killing it.
So, I'm gonna cede my time for the moment while I try and figure out what's going on.
Do you want us to come back? Or you just want to move along?
You know what? I think that if we move along,
she said everything she needs
I'm
to say.
I'm gonna be in a really good spot.
Okay.
I'm gonna be in a really good spot.
All right.
Yep.
We call her the Vibe Queen for a reason. Parker.
Yeah, I don't know.
See, this is a tough one.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I'm thinking about this. Like, I think I was pretty sure that South Alabama was good and that Oklahoma State was bad. So that really didn't change my perception of them. And you made a good point about West Virginia. I think the difference, like, TCU and West Virginia are both really interesting to me because they, like, those are both defensible losses relatively. I mean, I think TCU probably should have won that game if they could have done something in the red zone. But you've got to talk about expectations there. Because, like, obviously coming to the season, West Virginia and TCU had different expectations, but, you know, I don't know that either of their tracks are completely thrown off by their single loss there. Kansas State, I think, with the offensive line continuity, and bringing back Howard and bringing in
Avery Johnson,
Florida State running back,
Deshaun Ward.
Yeah.
Ward. Yep. And really thought that they thought they were going to run it back. And that Missouri loss doesn't affect that. It doesn't change that at all. It does make their margins a little bit narrower for maybe national contention. But what we saw from the offense felt a lot like pre-Colin Klein offense than it did a Colin Klein offense. And I wonder if they're not more limited in the playbook by Howard not having superstars around him, and by maybe losing Felix on defense mattered a little bit. They really couldn't get to a hobbled Brady Cook very often. So I'm least concerned about West Virginia and TCU because those losses really don't change very much about what I think about them. And I think Kansas State's loss was much more revealing about some underlying fundamental cracks, maybe.
In defense of Kansas State, which I can't believe I just said that.
No, you should say that because the Kansas State fans I know are already.
But no, I mean, well, Will Howard looked hobbled for the vast majority of that game.
He did get hurt.
I think what's more concerning is the fact that, yeah, they tried to soldier on with Will Howard, but like, Avery Johnson was supposed to be a good weapon for them, a good change of pace, like a good opportunity for them to do quite a bit. And when he came in, you knew exactly what was happening. Like, that was as telegraphed as it could possibly have been when he came on the field. If they had used him in a more of a change of pace type of role and had given Howard a true break, or even had just, you know, gone to him for a little bit because Howard was obviously hobbled, then I would have felt a whole lot better about it. But it makes me wonder, what do they have if Howard is not going to be able to be effective because he's injured or because he doesn't have, you know, the kind of stars that he needs to be able to get the ball to? What does Kansas State have? The offensive line has usually been the strength, but they've struggled against a Missouri defensive line that honestly, I didn't think a lot of people were extremely high on coming into the year. I think that they're probably better than a lot of people thought they were going to be coming into the year, but they're still not like one of the best defensive lines. And so there's room for concern for sure. I just think that they still have enough of a base that I expect them to finish higher in the conference than either TCU or West Virginia, assuming the wheels don't completely fall off.
I tend to agree with that.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I think all the points that you and Parker have made are very fair.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
I'm really not holding TCU's loss to Colorado against them because you had no idea what that team was going to look like because it was made out of nothing. Like, you could watch some Jackson State video, but like, I don't know how much.
No, fake news. They knew exactly what offense Colorado was going to run. They hired an offensive coordinator who's supposedly a mastermind in the Veer and Shoot, and Sean Lewis went and pants them. They had all season offseason to practice against supposedly one of the originators of the Veer and Shoot. And had no idea what to do with it. Got their asses absolutely kicked.
Okay.
I think, yeah. No. I think that's, I'm less sympathetic to that. I'm more so saying that loss didn't change what I thought of TCU's expectations for this year.
That's fair. And Oklahoma State and Cincinnati are, yeah. This is also, by the way, West Virginia fans getting mad because I put up the power rankings and I put Oklahoma State one spot ahead of West Virginia. You're mad because I put two non-bowl teams in different order than you would like to have them. I understand West Virginia beat Pitt. We'll talk about that in a second. But, like, how good is Pitt?
As I said to,
not good.
As I said to Brandon over on the Raspy Voice Kids, does Pitt even actually count as an FBS football team at this point?
Not their offense. All right, let's run through some scores real quick, and I'll get some thoughts if you guys have them. Houston 13, TCU 36. In Saturday's loss at TCU, Houston was held without an offensive touchdown for the first time since 2014. Houston's the worst team in the Big 12. I don't feel like it's close. It doesn't make sense with the talent that they supposedly have on this roster. Dana's time in Houston I think we were officially like we lit up the hot seat watch.
Hey, I figured it out. Okay, so what I did was I went through and I figured the average temperature for every city in the Big 12 during football season. So that's our hot seat tracker. And incidentally, the second hottest location in the Big 12 during football season is in fact Houston. But yeah, that's what we're going to do.
I cannot wait for this graphic reveal. I cannot wait. I haven't anticipated anything this much since my kid was born.
Oh, like, well then I've got really bad news. I haven't made a graphic for it, but this is just my theory. So we'll get there. But there's a method to it now.
We at least have a theme for the graphic. I might quibble a little bit about Houston being the worst, but honestly, like, it's defensible.
Well, it's a combination of motivation. Like, objectively, like, if Houston gave a, I don't know, can I curse? Sorry. If Houston gave a darn, they could probably beat that Cincinnati, Iowa State, even Oklahoma State tier. We are talking about the Q word already. Dana is on the sideline yelling GDMFer after every play, yelling at kids and stuff, dude. There's some bad mojo down there, dude.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We mentioned earlier Cincinnati 24, Miami of Ohio 31. Here's the stat. Including overtime, Cincinnati had drives end at the Miami of Ohio 3-yard line, 10-yard line, 5-yard line, 6-yard line, 18-yard line, and 2-yard line. They scored 9 points on 6 of those possessions and lost that game. I gave Cincinnati a ton of credit for week 1 and week 2, blowing out an FCS team like you should and beating Pitt on the road. Turns out, and this is why, like, Pitt might just not be very good. Pat Narduzzi is literally allergic to offense. It's why when the 1 year he had one, he immediately ran off the offensive coordinator. Like, Pitt may not be good. I don't know how much we should take away from that win. And at this point, I should have just stuck with my my preseason expectations of Cincinnati as it's a terrible hire. It's not going to work, and we'll see how this team does. We'll see how this team does moving forward. I mean, they're going to probably pull off a win or two. They shouldn't, just because it seems like the offense might be spicy enough. But, whew, losing that game, not the thing you want to do in your first season, Scott Satterfield. West Virginia 17, Pitt 6. Remember how I said Pat Narduzzi might be allergic to offense? I think he might be allergic to offense. The man does not want offense. He would win. Like, I think Pat Narduzzi might hate offense more than Matt Campbell does. Sorry, Jamie.
I don't even think Matt Campbell hates offense. I just think he doesn't understand it.
Congrats to West Virginia on this win. I'm not going to take – look, I'm making jokes. I'm not taking anything away from you. It's a rivalry game. You got this game at home for the first time in more than a decade. Like, celebrate, drink, revel, enjoy the next week. Y'all absolutely deserve it. Holding Pitt to 6 points is incredible, especially after C.J. Johnson gets hurt. Quarterback Garrett Green missed most of the game when he got injured. West Virginia, of course, won the turnover battle here 3-1. Y'all just enjoy it.
My biggest concern is the fact that Garrett Green got injured in that game. Like, looking at and knowing what we know about Pitt now, like, I'm glad that West Virginia won that one, because it would have been not great if they hadn't won that one. But you know, I think that that's the most concerning thing as a West Virginia fan, is and why you should enjoy this Pitt win as much as you do in a rivalry game, is because, yeah, you beat Pitt and you beat them fairly convincingly, but Garrett Green going down really kind of changes the complexion of this offense.
It will be interesting to see what they look like. Like I said, we'll talk about this coming week here in a minute. Let's hit a couple of the FCS games. Texas Tech 41, Tarleton 3.
Yeah. So, Philip, you had told me that you wanted you wanted me to look at this one really quick. 41-3, Texas Tech did pretty much whatever they wanted. Tarleton State did not score until the last 5 minutes of the game. On a field goal after the game was well and over. I think the biggest thing to come out of this game, though, is the fact that there are still concerns and there's still questions about who the starting quarterback should be. Texas Tech has had plenty of issues with trying to have a starting quarterback make it through an entire season. Tyler Shuck you know, start of the game, he had, looks like actually he had a rushing touchdown. He had a passing touchdown. But Baron Morton came into the game and ended the game. And there was a lot of Texas Tech fans that I saw, and just kind of watching the actual game itself, it seemed like Baron Morton had a better grasp on the offense, was running the offense better. And so there is legitimately, it seems like, at least among the fan base, a quarterback controversy for this team again. Makes you kind of wonder, you know, what is going to happen there with this team. It's not the way at all that Texas Tech was expecting to start this season. And, you know, the fact that they can find something to argue about coming out of a 41-3 win makes you kind of wonder, like, what's going on.
It's Morton time. That's all I'm going to, I gotta actually take the graphic with Tommy, the Green Ranger, and put Baron Morton's face on it. But it takes time, and I'm not a Photoshop.
What you should do is get one of the ones that they Photoshopped for that people start doing for
yeah,
Morbius.
It's Morbin time, and make it time, it's Morton
and
time.
And then put another one over it.
That's got so many.
Somebody get the.
It's got layers.
Somebody get the intern on that. Yeah. We need a couple Baron Morton gifts. There's, yeah.
Parker, you have an intern. Why don't you have him take care of that?
I'm legally not allowed to joke about my intern on podcasts. Sorry.
Fair enough. That's fine. We are talking about UCF. We talked about Kansas.
That's what I do when I work.
What? Joke about your intern?
No, I just do whatever I want because I'm a glorified babysitter.
Baylor 30, Long Island 7. This game was weird, ugly, and gross until a lightning delay, and then Baylor came out and kind of put the game away. I don't know how you walk away from a 30-7 win over an FCS team that is now 0-3 and not great, feeling confident. I'm not sure how confident you can feel as a Baylor fan through the first 3 weeks of the season.
It went from ugly and gross for both teams to ugly and gross for one team after the lightning play. That was it.
That feels about right. Feels about right. Parker, do you want to offer your thoughts on Baylor?
Dude, Baylor stinks. They're just like in such a bad situation. Like 2020 was perfect because they had all those old guys, and so their development lined up where their offensive line and their skill positions matched up on offense, and then their defense had like studs everywhere, and they just don't grow on trees anymore, and they haven't been able to develop them, and their offensive line is off cycle with their development of their skill positions. I honestly think if you ask Dave Aranda, he would admit to making a mistake letting Bohannon go. I think that they've been that messed up. Like, it's just, it's rough, man. It's rough. And I like Aranda. Like, I hate to see that. I don't know if it's working out, though.
Yeah. No, I agree. I don't want to see him go. I do. I'm going to say it. Look, Parker's the one who started the line, and I think it's accurate. I think you have to talk about COVID in relation to Iowa State's best season under Matt Campbell. I think you need to start talking about the COVID factor in relation to Oklahoma State and Baylor's 2021 season. Super seniors only existed because of COVID, and they played a huge part in both those teams finding their way to Arlington, which leads us to Oklahoma State. I don't want to spend 20 minutes of this show talking about Oklahoma State because Saturday's performance doesn't justify 20 something minutes talking about Oklahoma State or my current thoughts on Mike Gundy. I've got a lot of notes. I'm just going to go with this. Mike Leach used to say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. I'm now currently implying that to Gundy's retention of his offensive coaching staff, which
I think
is
you're flat out saying it, not implying it.
Not only that, but Mike Leach was not the only person that said that. He just is a great person.
I'm just going to give Mike Leach a quote because it's fun to talk about Mike Leach.
Fair. No. I'm fully 100% behind that.
Pet your cat, okay. Andy. Gundy went after a reporter at Pistol Firing after the bowl loss last year when he asked about making offensive coaching changes, and Gundy dug in and kept the staff the same. It's a staff that has now averaged 16 points per game over the last 9 games, and you can point to injuries all you want. The only injury I think that matters in relation to this is Spencer Sanders, who's the only good quarterback they've had on the roster in a long time, and right now I'm fully expecting Gunnar Gundy to be the starting quarterback for Oklahoma State moving forward because Alan Bowman has been I don't necessarily blame him. The guy had started football game in like 3 years. It's not good in Stillwater at all. That is the worst loss of the Gundy era in relation to, yes, they've had, you could argue, worse losses. They lost at Troy in like his second season. You got blown out at Kansas State last year after starting 5-1. They've had bad losses. This is not the kind of... They had the fluky fail Mary to Central Michigan in 2016. You got pantsed at home by South Alabama. That is not the kind of loss you're supposed to have at this point if you're still a good program. This is going to be a long season. It's going to be a long...
I mean, at this point, though, it makes me wonder if...
Oh, go ahead, Eddie.
Like, you know, we've talked off and on, but I think even talking all the way back, you know, it was several years ago where we had the question about whether Gary Patterson or Mike Gundy would, you know, leave their school first. I mean, Mike Gundy has been, there's been rumors swirling about whether it's time to have Mike Gundy leave the program, whether it's, you know, his own decision or someone else's decision. I don't know how this start of the year does anything to quiet any of that. Like, at what point is the fur big enough that there's real legitimate discussions about Gundy being on the hot seat?
Barker, you want to say something?
I'm more inclined to believe that he is in Dabo territory than he is in Patterson territory, but it is important to realize, much like many of us, the older we get, the more likely it is we die every year. And longer tenures do believe that the end does come faster the longer your tenure is. So I think that we're there is kind of a great reckoning. There are going to be some holdouts here in terms of who can play ball in the new kind of world. But I think that Gundy has the cachet to kind of be afforded the chance to at least flounder in the new Big 12 if he has to. But yeah, it's not great.
One of my favorite movie lines of all time: you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. I think we've passed the hero stage for Mike Gundy. All right, Jamie, we have to talk about it. We just do. Iowa State 7, Ohio 10.
In what?
I believe it was football. I believe it was football.
Not familiar.
Yes, understood. Understandable.
By the way, I love how my cat coming on camera has Jamie the most engaged in this podcast episode she's been. So
10-12 network podcast Cat Talk coming out soon. It has nothing to do with West Virginia or Houston or BYU
or Kansas State.
I'm talking about cats.
I wish this was a video podcast so the world could see Andy's villain energy right now, like sitting here talking and just stroking his cat.
Just
for the record, Iowa State did in fact, this would have been a way better bit. Iowa State volleyball literally beat Ohio on Friday. Missed opportunity. I'm not in midseason form. It's obvious. Me and everybody else in this.
Iowa State field goal with 7:23 left in the game was called no good. Iowa State fans vehemently disagree. That's fine. We'll probably talk about that on the Big 12 special teams show later this week on our YouTube channel.
It was good, and that makes it funnier. Here's the question I have with Iowa State. Is this team really 100 deckers away from being competent, even?
It has very, very, very little, if anything, to do with the people that got popped for gambling. And that's anyone who's arguing that, I haven't really seen any Iowa State fans arguing that that's the case. It's mostly been people outside of it that are saying that because it's just an assumption they're making. Anyone that follows the team says that it would have very little negative impact. And given the way that Decker's played at points last year, Beck might be a step up.
It literally, the only thing it did was reduce the number of bodies they have. I don't think it changed talent levels.
Yep. And I think that's it's a good litmus test kind of question for like the state of this roster and saying like, got lucky with a couple dudes. Didn't develop those dudes to their potential. Looking at Breece Hall and Brock Purdy in the league, honestly, right there. And like last year was asking Jalen Noel to do so many things that Jalen Noel just could not do. I think he has a very good, you know, role, and they didn't have the guys to feature him in that role. They had asked him to do stuff he couldn't do. And yeah, I think that this was like, you, even with Iowa State's roster, you should just be able to line up and win this game. You should just, you should just know, hey, we've got this one thing. We know we're good at it. Fine, we'll just do it. We'll get out of here. And they couldn't even go to the back and get it there. So yeah, just very, very rough. In all reality, they probably deserved to win it in overtime. The field goal was good, but college football's funny. So
I will also say the fact that they looked so much better in the fourth quarter when they went to the hurry up finally, like that is a huge indictment on offensive coaching staff. Like, because
It wasn't just the hurry up.
I'm sorry. When they went with tempo in general.
Well, it's not just tempo. They actually spaced the field out. They actually spread. Like, if you really watch, like, for three quarters, they basically, like, you could predict what they were going to do. They play in a small pocket of the field as opposed to actually utilizing the full field. So defenses can just key in on one certain small area to defend, and it makes them easy. And the offensive line cannot run block effectively. Like, they can't. And so once they actually spaced things out and let the and played football like you're supposed to in the modern era, like they moved the ball pretty well and they trusted their quarterback and they got a touchdown drive. And so it's just like if you're gonna play ugly football, low scoring football, and you can't find yourself a guy who can make field goals, because he did have another miss in the game, and you can say, well, that should have been a make and it should have been fine, but like you need a field goal kicker. If you're going to play ugly football and you can't make a high percentage of your field goals, like, this is what you get. And Iowa State special teams, like, yeah, they seem like they're better this year, but they've been terrible under Matt Campbell the entire time, and plays into the whole, like, we put the stat on Twitter. He's now 6-21 in any game, in all games at Iowa State, in which the betting line before the game is -4 or +4. And his one-score game record continues to be god-awful atrocious. I'd have to go scroll through my phone to find it. It's not good. It's real bad. Outside of 2020. And so, like, at some point, you're going to have to figure something out. Like, you're going to have to make a change you don't want to make. Or, I don't know. I just don't know. I hate it for Iowa State fans because, like, it sucks to feel like you've finally gotten there and then just to have the, like, rug pulled out from underneath you. So, totally.
Insecure. It feels so, I guess, disappointing, the fact that for all of the disappointing teams we're talking about in the Big 12 so far, it seems to be mostly coaching related. Coaches not, you know, either sticking with people that they shouldn't have been for longer than they should have, you know, or just not putting their players in a good position to be able to be successful, or losing the sideline, losing the locker room. Like, it's just, it seems to be that there's coaching issues along too many teams in the Big 12 right now that is causing a lot of problems.
I think they're,
and most of the talent issues are coaching related. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Jamie, you've teased volleyball a few times. You want a little Big 12 volleyball update before we talk about week 2 or week 4?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a really fun week for volleyball. I called my first volleyball game on ESPN2 on ESPN. Oh, that would have been big time. ESPN Plus this weekend. That was a blast. Iowa State took down Drake in straight sets. Had a little bit of a setback against UCSB, but frankly, with a team as young as Iowa State is at a lot of positions, tell me if you've heard that one before. You kind of anticipate having one of those ones that you probably should win and you drop it. They had a comeback win against Iowa earlier in the season. They dropped this one against UCSB, but I think they learned from it because they dominated a very good Drake team. We're heading into conference play this week, and there's a lot of teams that I think are going to be kind of clumped together. I talked about this a little bit maybe last week before, and just said that it looks like potentially the most competitive volleyball season we have had in quite a while. Texas is not the Texas of old. They are still very, very good, but they are not world beaters. They are not unbeatable like they have looked at times, unless you're Iowa State, who was the only one to take them down last year. But I mean, yeah, it's going to be a really fun season. Big performance this past week. TCU picked with Iowa State kind of in the middle of the pack, but with how good the Big 12 is this year, those are going to be really pretty good teams nationally speaking. But they had, I still honestly can't even believe it, in back-to-back sets, they had one of their hitters, let me find her first name. Melanie Para broke her career high with 27 kills and then one-upped it in the next match that they played to get 34 kills in a four-set match, which is like, it's absurd. It's absolutely incredible. So really, really impressed by that. Obviously, I would imagine that she would be the Big 12 Offensive Player of the Week for volleyball. But yeah, it's going to be really fun now that we finally get to see the Big 12 start competing against each other, because if anything, this non-conference slate has established that there is a lot of parity in the Big 12 for volleyball this year. So it'll be super, super fun. I will be watching a lot of it.
Another Big 12 sport that has a ton of parity right now is soccer. BYU and TCU drawing, Kansas, Oklahoma drawing. Like, there's a lot of really good soccer teams as well that are really super exciting to watch. So I'm looking just as much forward to the European style football as I am the North American style football in the conference this year.
It's a lot to pay attention to, a lot to watch, a lot of great stuff going on in the Big 12. Parker had to bounce. You know, we're a little late here getting the show wrapped up. That's okay. We're going to wrap this show up now the way we do every week. We look to the weekend ahead. Each of us will pick the game that we are most interested in this coming weekend. We cannot pick our own team. I will read you the lineup in chronological order. We open the day on Saturday, no Thursday or Friday games, on Saturday, big noon kickoff on Fox, Oklahoma at Cincinnati, SMU at TCU on FS1 at 11. 2:30, we get BYU at Kansas on ESPN. 2:30, we also get Texas Tech at West Virginia on ESPN+. 3 o'clock, Oklahoma State at Iowa State on FS1. Houston hosting Sam Houston at 6 o'clock on ESPN+. Texas at Baylor, ABC, 6:30 p.m. And at 7 o'clock on FS1, UCF at Kansas State. Andy, what's your game of the week?
First of all, I do want to say that it's kind of strange to have Kansas being on ESPN at 2:30 in the middle of the afternoon. Like, that's just a little weird for me. But in terms of the game I'm actually looking forward to, it's a tough one for me, right? Because we're either looking at an undefeated UCF against a Kansas State team that's looking to bounce back at the end of the day, or I think an intriguing matchup that's going to tell us more about the middle of the conference in Texas Tech at West Virginia. I think just because of the fact that it's UCF's first Big 12 conference game, I'm going to go with UCF Kansas State because I can't go with Kansas BYU. But I think that those are the ones that are the more interesting ones to me of the teams that are coming new to the conference that have tough tests but have a good opportunity to actually win those tests.
Yep, I was kind of between UCF, K-State, and in the interest of giving a different answer, I'll go with Kansas BYU, just because I think that it has a lot of potential to kind of let us know where people are shaking out in the Big 12. You know, as Parker was talking about, he had them as very similar in kind of the way he's looking at them right now. And I think that that's really not a bad way to be viewing them. But if one of them is going to really separate themselves from the rest of the pack, from where they're being perceived right now, this would be kind of the time where you would see that start to show itself. So definitely could learn a lot from it.
I think you could have named the best games or the most interesting games between UCF Kansas State and BYU at Kansas. I'm going to pick Oklahoma at Cincinnati. This is Cincinnati's first Big 12 game. They've been waiting for this forever. They're getting to host Oklahoma. The crowd should be incredible. And Andy, to your note, like, this should be Oklahoma's first real test. Cincinnati coming off of a rivalry loss. Can they bounce back? Is Oklahoma really as good as they've looked in their 3-0 start? Their 14-point favorite, are they going to cover another double-digit spread? Like,
it's also kind of delicious, the fact that Oklahoma has to go on the road to Cincinnati for a 11 a.m. kickoff that Oklahoma fans complain so much about.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's why they're leaving, actually. The real reason they leave the Big 12 is 11 a.m. kickoffs on Fox. They hate that. I'm very interested in that game. I will play catch up on it since I coach U4, U5 girls soccer at 11:30 in the morning. So that's fine. Still appreciate that schedule there, Matt. I do have to note something that we might start doing this season, which is the Big 12 sicko game of the week. Oklahoma State at Iowa
State. There's going to be some of them, huh?
Oklahoma State at Iowa State. The line is currently Iowa State -2.5. The total opened at 35.5. I think it's actually been bet up a point. I don't know who's putting their money on the over 35.5 in Iowa State, Oklahoma State. Like,
yeah, it's at 36.5 right now.
Iowa, Iowa State, Iowa is called El Asico. I have petitioned that Iowa State, Oklahoma State this year be called El Trashico, because this one could just get ugly. Just awful football.
I feel like there's something state penitentiary related that we could work into a name for this.
Trashico works.
I guess that would work. But
it's not a major rewrite of the original name. Yeah, I'm just going to give you a sneak peek for Thursday's pick show. I'm taking the under in this game. I don't care what the line move. I'm taking the under. It's that kind of stuff. So
this feels like it could be a game where the total points could be under 10. Like, I'm just saying, that's how bad it seems like it could be.
6-3, because that would require, if Iowa State wins,
3-2. Give me a 3-2 game. No, I do wonder though, if we say Sicko's game of the week,
it's 6-3 in overtime.
Oh, yeah, there we go. No, double overtime.
Oh, God.
But no, I mean, I do wonder if we start doing this Sicko's game of the week, right? Like, how many of those are over or under two games that don't involve either Oklahoma State or Iowa State?
I don't see that happening. Like, I thought you were going to set the over under on Iowa State games, and I was going to take the over. Because I promise you, the week that Iowa State and Baylor meet, that's the sicko game of the week.
So what you're saying is that every single one of those games is going to have either Iowa State or Oklahoma State in it?
Or Baylor or Houston.
Right.
It's about who's gonna run it up on him.
No. I want two bad teams that probably, like, this one works because neither team might score. Like, we.
That's what I'm saying. It's like finding who's in a game where they ain't gonna get it run up on.
Oh yeah, there it is. Yeah. Lowest score. The lowest point total in a Big 12 game ever. Well, note this. I had to do this research. Is 12 points total. It was. Three times, team has won 12-0. That's the lowest points scored in a Big 12 conference game since the conference was founded in 1996. Will Oklahoma State, Iowa State make
it.
New? Yes.
This season, we may have a single digit total.
And honestly, I think the worst part is that there's more than one possibility.
Oh. That's the thing. It's not one game I'm saying, but this season, I think there's a good shot we get a single digit total.
There's our 10-12 Twitter poll of the week is does a new record low hit this season? Oh
boy.
That's a note to end on. We appreciate Parker hopping on the show with us. He's of course Stats of War on Twitter. The man does a ton. He is on so many different shows and I watch a bunch of them because I think Parker does incredible work. I understand some people who don't like him. That's fine. You do you. Also joining us as usual, Andy Mitts at Andy Mitts 12. That's MITTS. Yes, Kansas State fans, we know you don't like him. He, of course, is the host of the Rock Chalk podcast. It's available everywhere podcasts can be found, as well as at 1012network.com. TEN, the number 12, the word network. JSJ is at JSTEYZ on the Twitter machine. We are at 1012 Network on Twitter. At 1012 Network on Blue Sky, at 1012 Pod on Threads and Instagram, and 1012 Podcast on YouTube. Yes, we'll have an interview on Tuesday. I don't know what it is yet. Yes, we will have a special team show on Wednesday. I don't know who the guest is yet. We'll be talking about the Iowa State miss. And probably the Missouri one. That feels like a good starting point for the show. And whatever else happens. So, and of course, PixPod on Thursday. Make sure and leave us 5 stars in review. We would appreciate it. Shop, Charlie, Hustle, Checkout, Sport, Social. We'll talk to y'all again on this thread on Thursday.
Social Podcast Network.